will come back. From a family, there will be two out of that family. There's going to be some who are going to come back. And where are they going to come? To Zion, which is another name for the hill that Jerusalem sat on. This is introducing, by the way, this theme of the Messianic age, which is we're going to roll right into in the next verse. But no, you might be thinking, I wonder if anybody's thinking this, but wait a minute. He said in verse 1, if I send you away, you can't come back. So how then is he going to welcome them home? Because he says in verse 1, once you get divorced and you go out with somebody else, you can't come back. So how's this going to work? Let's keep reading. I will give you shepherds after my own heart, who will feed you with knowledge and understanding. When you have multiplied and been fruitful in the land, in those days, declares the Lord, they shall no longer say, or no more say, the ark of the covenant of the Lord. It shall not come to mind or be remembered or missed. It shall not be made again. That's a huge clue. What time is he talking about here? He says, in some day down the road, I'm going to bring back some of those people that I sent away. They're going to come back to Zion. And they're going to be prosperous. And it's going to, they won't even mention or remember or miss the Ark of the Covenant. Now that's interesting, isn't it? Why wouldn't they mention or remember? Why would they forget all about the Ark of the Covenant and not even talk about it anymore? Because of what Daryl read for us in the reading. In chapter 31, he says, behold, the days are coming when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and Judah, declares the Lord. Not like the covenant I made with their fathers when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. For I'll make a new covenant with them. It's going to be a new arrangement. Kind of like we're going to start over completely this whole marriage thing. And we're going to have new wedding vows. And we're going to have a complete new arrangement. The new covenant is going to be different from the old covenant. And it's part of our, do you see the Ark of the, I mean, we don't have the Ark of the Covenant. In fact, we don't look for it. We don't talk about it. I mean, we talk about it because we study about it. But it's not part of our arrangement with God. So that was part of the Jews' arrangement with God. And what he's signaling here is, in those days when I bring them back, things are going to be totally different than they have been in the past, which is, again, verse chapter 31 that Daryl read for us. I will make a new covenant, not like the one I made with their fathers, but a new covenant. So let's keep reading. In part of this, by the way, verse 15, they're going to have shepherds. That's pretty cool, isn't it? In this new covenant, there's going to be shepherds. Those shepherds are going to be after my own heart. They had sorry shepherds in the Old Testament. He said, you're going to have good shepherds. And they're going to feed you with knowledge and understanding. And when you've been prosperous, you will kind of forget about the Ark of the Covenant. Verse 17, at that time, Jerusalem will be called the throne of the Lord. All the nations will gather to it, to the presence of the Lord in Jerusalem, and they shall no more stubbornly follow their own evil heart. In those days, the house of Judah shall join the house of Israel, and together they shall come from the land of the north to the land that I gave your fathers for a heritage. We're going to stop there for tonight. But let's think about what he's saying here. He's telling of a time that's coming in the future. There's going to be some of these people from the north who are going to be called home. Not all of them, but one from a city, two from a family. They're going to come back. And who else is going to be there? Judah's going to be there. The two are going to be brought back together and reunited. Not only that, did you notice a bunch of other people are going to be there? All the nations, verse 17, will gather to it. You got people coming from everywhere. And where are they going? They're going to Jerusalem. And they're going to form this beautiful new thing. When does that happen? Through Christ in the New Testament. The message was sounded forth from Jerusalem to the whole world. And the gospel message went out. And you notice there it said there were Jews from every nation under heaven. And you have people who had come to Jerusalem for the feast. They heard Peter preaching. They heard about how to become Christians. They obeyed. A brand new arrangement starts there in Acts chapter 2. Let's end up in Hebrews 12, and we'll stop there for tonight. Hebrews 12, to connect one more thread of this picture together. You'll notice there that he talked about Jerusalem being the throne of God. Now, there are people to this day, right now, 2019, that feel like the physical city, Jerusalem, has a special part in God's plan, even to this day, and that we, as America, should protect them, if for no other reason, if that's a holy place, and that God has a plan, he's still going to yet bring about something to do with his plan there in this, you know, city of Jerusalem. So there's a lot of people that have that feeling, that Jerusalem retains a special part in God's plan. And it's probably based on prophecies like this one that point to a return of the glory to Jerusalem. But notice in Hebrews chapter 12, when it talks about the city of Jerusalem that we have come to as Christians, let's just start in verse 18. You have not come to what may be touched, a blazing fire, darkness, a gloom, a tempest, the sound of a trumpet, a voice whose words made the hearers beg that no further messages be spoken to them. For they could not endure the order that was given, if even a beast touches the mountain, it shall be stoned. Indeed, so terrifying was the sight that Moses said, I tremble with fear. He's saying that was the way it was when they made their covenant. Remember that? At the foot of Mount Sinai, the ground shook, and they were told, don't go up there, and even if an animal touches it, it's going to be killed. He said, that's not the way your covenant is. But you, verse 22, have come to where? Mount Zion. Zion's call sweetly rings. That's where you've come. To the city of the living God. Okay, that's where you've come to. The heavenly Jerusalem. To innumerable angels in festal gathering. To the assembly of the firstborn who are enrolled in heaven. To God, the judge of all, the spirits of the righteous made perfect. And to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant. And the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. I believe this makes it clear that the type of Jerusalem we've come to is not the physical earthly city of Jerusalem, but a heavenly Jerusalem, which is another name for the church. As he talks about in Revelation, I saw a heavenly Jerusalem coming down as a bride adorned for her husband, by the way. This whole marriage imagery kind of goes through the whole thing. But here he's saying you have come not to something that may be touched. You don't have to worry about touching it and being struck down like they did in Moses' day. He was so afraid. You've come to the heavenly city, to Mount Zion, the heavenly Jerusalem, where there's angels and everybody who's saved and all the enrolled, and Jesus is there. And that's the city of Jerusalem that we have come to, which I believe is clearly saying it's a spiritual Jerusalem, a heavenly Jerusalem, not the earthly town or city of Jerusalem in the physical land of Palestine, but this, the church is what I think is the fulfillment of that. And all the way back there in Jeremiah's day, he was saying, and back in Josiah's day when Jeremiah got that message, hey, look, they're not getting it, and I'm still going to wipe them out because they didn't learn from Israel's mistake. But one day, I'm going to bring them back. I'm going to bring those northern people back, and they'll be joined to the southern people and all the nations in this beautiful thing. It'll be, and they'll forget all about the Ark of the Covenant because it's going to be a brand new arrangement that God's going to make with his people, and that's a beautiful picture. Let me point out two lessons from this for us to take away from it. Number one, he said that they did not learn from their sister what happened to her. And therefore, Judah, treacherous Judah, was worse than faithless Israel. And the point is that they had the opportunity to learn by watching how God dealt with their sister to the north. And they didn't learn. And therefore, there's no excuse for them. And we're told the things were written before were written for our learning. And Paul says, therefore, do not desire evil like they did. Don't make that mistake. So we have the benefit of seeing how all this played out. And we can find out how God responds when his people who are part of his, turn on him and go after other gods and go after other things. And so will there be any excuse for a modern Christian who has this word to show up on the day of judgment? And well, I didn't know. We have every reason to know how God feels about people who are his people, his bride, who are off chasing after other things. And so we need to learn the lesson. And don't be like Judah, who had in vivid view how God deals with this and then didn't learn from their mistake, but made the same mistake themselves and therefore brought condemnation on themselves. And we don't want that. And the second thing is, he said, they have turn to me, but only in pretense. So during Josiah's day, Josiah was a powerful reformer. And sometimes someone comes along who's very influential and maybe leads people back in the right way. But it's important that they do that because their own hearts have turned back to God, not just because they're kind of following in the crowd. It needs to, because what I believe God makes it clear that he sees the hearts of people, everyone. And yes, Josiah was kind of out front, leading people, going back in the right direction, trying to turn this thing around. But unfortunately, everybody else in the boat with him, their hearts were still on the idols. And so as soon as Josiah was out of the picture, they're right back where they had been. And that just shows their hearts never really changed. So it's important for each of us in our own heart to seek the Lord and to repent of our sins, because that's what we'll be judged by. Not by the direction that the whole thing was going, but individually. And that's the good news. If you're a Josiah and you live in a time when everybody else, things seem to be falling apart, but you personally have this commitment to follow the Lord, what an assuring message that God says, hey, you go tell that king that sent you, go tell that man that sent you to me that I see him and that I see his heart and I know he wants the right thing. And that is very comforting if you happen to live in a treacherous time, that you can make your heart right with God and he sees that regardless of what's going on around you. And that's what's important. Perhaps there's someone tonight who needs to make something right in your life, and maybe this message has touched you in some way. We certainly would be glad to pray with you and to do whatever we can to help if you'll let us know as we stand and sing.